Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here to tell you a little bit about tonight's special recap of The Quest, Episode 3. Tonight, I am going to be on my way to go to Dallas for the Podcast Movement Conference, which I'm speaking at this weekend. So I didn't have time to get to tonight's episode of The Quest. That's why we brought in Jessica Leese to co-host with Kurt Clark and talk about everything that happened in EverRealm tonight. So enjoy the show with Kurt and Jessica tonight, and if you're dying to hear me talk about The Quest, check out my interview with three of the executive producers from The Quest that I did earlier this week, all at robhasawebsite.com. Enjoy the show.
Coming to you live from the realm of Sanctum, it's Rob Has a Podcast, and now two people who should earn their mark of podcasting by now, Kurt Clark and Jessica Leese. Hey, Jessica, how's it going?
It's going great, Kurt. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. We're covering episode 3 of The Quest with Rob out in the field. And so he's asked that we cover this in his place, in his stead.
Yeah, I think we're going to rise to the challenge and be the heroes of podcasting.
Yes, I'm hoping. Hopefully, there can be two. This is not like a Highlander where there can be only one.
No, certainly not. We can share the dragon's tears.
There we go.
it's a Rob Has a Podcast with 100% less Rob.
Yes, Rob free. It's a RFHAP.
Yes.
And speaking of dragon's tears, gosh, I was having a lot of trouble. Actually, I found out sadly about right at the time The Quest was supposed to be starting that the Chicago area was airing basically an exhibition game between Jacksonville and Chicago for the preview of the NFL season. So I got started a little bit late. Talk about, I was crying some dragon's tears myself, but I did get caught up, and we're here to talk about everything that went down in the wake of our whodunit version of The Quest last week, which we ended with the poisoning of the queen.
Yeah, now, did you think the queen was dead? Because I thought the queen was dead.
I did not think that the queen was dead. Well, to be fair, I didn't get a lot of chance to process it before I saw the previews for the next week. And it looked like they were trying to find a cure of some sort. So I think I pieced it together pretty quickly that she wasn't dead. I had thought that if they were going to kill her off, they would have had her die right there at the table. They wouldn't have ushered her off in a coughing fit.
Yeah, that's fair.
What I suspect, but yeah, we still don't know. Well, unless it was anything that was revealed in the first 10 minutes of The Quest, we still don't know who poisoned her. Is that correct?
That is correct, and I think everybody's got their suspicions. And I really think it's down to three suspects. And I know this isn't whodunit, we're not playing that game, but it's got to be either Ansgar or the Vizier or Creo, right?
The three other named characters we have in the show.
Exactly. It's not it's not extra number six over there.
Yeah, it's not one of the players. It's not, peasant standing in field number 13.
Yeah, it's not that dude sawing a log in the background.
Although those are our paladins now too. Our paladins are, it's nice to see that they're helping out with the chores around Castle Sanctum.
That didn't look like very much fun.
I would love to hear, like, after the fact, what exactly direction they were given. Like, literally, would say, okay, you guys do this. Were the people staying in character as they were assigning the paladins their tasks, so that the paladins got to make up stuff to do? And It's nice to hear. Anybody who hasn't caught it yet, if you are subscribing to the main feed of Rob Has a Podcast, he actually had an interview with several of the producers of The Quest that I believe it came out today. He interviewed them this morning. And it goes really into great detail about how the hiring process for the actors and the fact that they had to have an improvisational background and everybody was staying in character. And some of their casting process and goes into, it's a really great podcast if anybody wants to take a listen. I guess they were talking about how, all the paladins were really into it. So who knows? They were just helping around the courtyard.
Yeah, I wonder if there were actual chores to be done or if they had to stage some chores.
move the wood over here, now move it back over here, that sort of thing.
Yeah, dump out some horse poop in the middle of the courtyard.
Yeah. But I think that this is supposedly the format we're going to be seeing for the upcoming episodes, is that it is going to, you're going to have the Trial of the Fates, somebody is going to get banished, but then there's some sort of teaser or cliffhanger that the show ends with. So at the end of episode 2, we saw that the queen was poisoned, and we see at the end of episode 3 that the castle is in fact under attack.
Yeah, and this is fantastic. This is something new that I have not seen before, and I was very cynical about the premiere of the quest, and now that they've sucked me into the story, I think that's a similar deal with the paladins. I'm like all in now. It's so interesting.
Right. And what do you suspect is you know, we've kind of outlined that, like, the main bad guy is this character named Verlox the Darkness, which I guess it's only natural to battle with a sun spear if he is the darkness. Like, is he attacking himself? Is it his minions? So we have no idea, do we?
No, I don't think we really know. And I think we're going to get to see the face of the bad guys next week.
Okay. That'll be cool.
And Verlox the Darkness is a fantastic metal band name. Just throwing that out there. That one's a freebie.
I'll have to come up with a different name then. Well, so I missed the very beginning of the episode. I mean, we're not going to, you know, let's maybe kind of work our way through this. We obviously, the episode ended with one of my favorites, Jim, the paladin, being banished. We'll work our way there and how that all ended up. But at the beginning, when I last left the quest, the queen was being, you know, taken away. She was ill. And then as I watched the beginning of the quest today, there's some guys on a football field tossing a ball around. So perhaps would you like to kick off things a little bit talking about how the episode began?
Yeah, we'll give you like the very quick and dirty summary here. The queen is lying on a bed looking very goth and very corpsey. And
I saw her when they came back with the cure. And I was like, she's... That's death's door right there.
Yeah, it's not a good scene. This was a very powerful poison, and nobody really knows what the poison is. And the vizier is trying to treat her, but he's kind of out of ideas. And so the new plan, everybody has to go out and, like, they're all going to collect every single recipe for every potion they can possibly have, and we'll cross-reference it with the list of symptoms that the queen is exhibiting, and thereby finding the right recipe for the potion, and then they can go out and make the potion. And Ansgar, of course, is a total dick to everybody.
Of course. That's why we love him.
That's what he does. And the vizier and Ansgar just kind of snip at each other, like, don't boss me around. And then there's a big pile of scrolls, and they go into, like, the deliberation room with a bunch of scrolls and dig through all these scrolls and compare it to the list of what they know is wrong with the queen. Like, she's got skin like ice, unwakeable slumber, and blue lips, and there's, like, 10 things.
And then if they pull out the scroll and it says something about leakage, they know that that's not the right scroll.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Like, one of them said rapid aging and an erection lasting more than 4 hours.
Really? Great.
Yeah, so they find the right one. Patrick finds the list eventually, and there's 4 ingredients that they need to get to make this potion. And they're all very Severus Snape-esque. We get the bat teeth, wolf hair, banshee blood, and dragon tears.
Ah, dragon tears.
Yep.
And then that's when they... I tuned in, they had just started, or just I think finished talking to the witch or the hag in the woods. And so I'm assuming that they were pointed in some manner that this is a person that they had to seek.
Yeah, they were talking about the dragon tears, and everyone's like, is that even a thing? And Jim says, how do you make a dragon cry? And then Creo says, wait, no, I know where you can go to get dragon tears. I've lived here all my life. I know this hag, and she lives in the middle of the forest, and I watched it like 4 or 5 times. I could not catch, she's the hag of something. It's like the hag of Pertwool or something.
That's why I was like, unfortunately, when I was watching it on my TV last year, the closed captioning helped immensely with the names. And so I think from now on, you know, I had to watch it online and I wasn't able to do that. But from now on, definitely, if anybody's wondering, I recommend the closed captioning.
Yeah, that's a good plan. Yeah, so they call the hag. She's a kind of a hoarder, so they call her the collector. And she's got every ingredient known to humankind. And a cauldron that apparently has not stopped boiling for 1,000 years.
Ooh.
I don't know what you cook that takes 1,000 years, but
there's some stews out there, I'm sure.
Get a bowl of brown. Know,
it's like an ancient crock pot.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, set and it I think and forget
that,
it.
And I think that's about when I tuned in. We were just learning that that the paladins had to basically to claim these ingredients had to break down a series of doors.
Yep. And this hag, I just warmed my heart actually, because this was a very, very obvious nod to one of my favorite movies of all time, The Princess Bride.
Oh, yes, the Billy Crystal character, correct?
Yeah. The hag looked exactly like, you know, she'd be right at home with Miracle Max and Valerie.
And it looked a little to me like the witch that Bernadette Peters played in Into the Woods also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And there was one point where I was expecting her, getting a little ahead of ourselves when they were actually putting all the ingredients together. She kind of like ducks down. I think, is she going to like take off the costume and suddenly she's young again? And that was her incentive the whole time. But no.
Yeah. Well, and I love the comment that if she's that powerful, how come she's not better looking?
Exactly. Great with great power comes great cost often.
Clearly.
Yes.
So she says there's no such thing as a free lunch. You have to get these ingredients out of these. You have to beat down the doors. And this is a Survivor challenge, kind of. Like, I've seen this format on Survivor. Like, there's a round, all this series of rounds, and every round, some people make it through, and then fewer people make it through until the very end, where the last person gets the prize.
Right, and the first door that they each had to break. So at this point, there are 10 paladins, correct?
Yeah.
In episode 3. And so this first one, it sounds like they were each given a key to the door, but the lock to the door was gunked up with tar. So they had to basically clean out the lock, use the key on the lock, and then break through to the next round.
Yep.
And we saw a couple interesting things here. So this musical chairs type of challenge where you have fewer and fewer people advancing to each round didn't seem to really end up coming into play, because there's a few people who didn't even make it past the first round.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty clear that there was not much of a contest there. It was more, it's another one of those things, like we say this a lot on The Amazing Race, if you're going to put suspense into something, you have to have it in one of two places. You have to have it at the beginning or you have to have it at the end. So you want to see who wins or you want to see who loses.
That's a great point. And here it was, I think, a little bit closer about who would win.
Yeah.
But in this case, there wasn't much. We haven't really seen that we know that if anybody, quote unquote, wins one of these challenges, they get the mark. There was the mark of dexterity last week and the mark of leadership the prior week. And this week, the mark of wisdom. I think they're making their way through all the classic Dungeons and Dragons attributes. We haven't seen really that there's a benefit for getting these marks yet. So there wasn't. It seemed like there were a few people on the bottom a good deal of the time, and it didn't seem like there was a lot invested in who actually wins.
Yeah, that's true. It really is more about you're competing to keep yourself out of the bottom three.
Which is a little bit like Amazing Race.
It is very much like Amazing Race.
As long as you don't. And we know that there is the production team, there's some overlap. It's with the Amazing Race team was involved in this show somehow.
Yeah, Bertram and Elise, who are the creators of Amazing Race, are also the creators of The Quest.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's almost like the same people made it.
It's just don't come in last.
Yep. Exactly.
And we saw, it seemed like, to your point, in terms of like the early leaders, it seemed to be a race between Andrew and Patrick for most of this game. And we saw basically that Bonnie and Christian were out of it completely.
Yeah. Yeah, and it looked like it might have been a little bit closer. Like, I think Jim was in the mix for a while, but ultimately it wasn't enough.
Yeah, because I saw that. So, the first stage was the, like you said, like the lock with the tar on it. And it seemed like Bonnie couldn't clean her lock, but Christian somehow just lost his key. Like, he dropped his key, no idea where it went. Did it bounce under the door? Did it, fall into some of the shrubbery off to the side? He could not find the key. And he was pretty much just doomed, even though Bonnie did offer to help him.
Yeah, and I think this might have been... Bonnie's very much into this, like, spirit of cooperation and togetherness. And
yes.
There seem to be two schools of thought, and mostly one school of thought is just Christian saying, I want to win and be the hero, and I'm going to step on everybody, and I'm not here to make friends, etc., etc. And so Christian is not the person that you should be reaching out to.
Yeah, maybe she hasn't seen... We've definitely seen that it seems like Jasmine... is very keyed into who is into Christian and his game.
Yeah, she's got his number.
Yes. But yeah, Bonnie either knows it and doesn't care or just hasn't seen it. But yeah, he's very much not exactly embodying, at least in his confessionals, the attitude that we would necessarily want in the one true hero.
Yeah, that's very true. And honestly, the comparison that struck me this episode, Christian seems like this show's answer to Zach from King of the Nerds.
I can see that.
He's a lot less abrasive, but he's also, like, there's this mythos around him where people think he's a lot better at this stuff than he might actually be, and he keeps screwing up and keeps making it into the bottom and somehow keeps weaseling his way out of trouble.
Yeah, we even saw last week... somebody at the deliberation had said that, you know, when they were looking between choosing between Ashley and Christian in episode 2, that, you know, Ashley's good at what she says she's good at, even though it may not be a lot of things, but whereas Christian says he's good at a lot of things and we haven't seen many of the things pan out.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, that does seem very Zach-like from King of the Nerds.
Yeah.
And so they never got past, I think, the first stage.
Yeah, I think the bottom three didn't even get their doors open.
Yeah, and I thought for some reason that Letitia, the kind of the WWE woman on the team, I thought that she was maybe back there too. I didn't realize that Jim was still stuck in the first door, but I know that she saw Bonnie stopping to help Christian and also observed that Christian really wasn't helping Bonnie a whole lot, that it wasn't really an equitable trade of services there. But yeah, I don't think, yeah, Jim, I think you had to have been stuck at the door still, because then the second stage was taking, I believe it was an ogre's tooth and cutting through some ropes to get that next door open. And
yeah, and you do see it was kind of a mini Amazing Race Matt edit where you see Letitia working on the door, you see Jim working on the door, you see Jim has got his key in the lock, and then it cuts to the next set of doors and you see Letitia burst through.
Right. And yeah, it wasn't, and we, I guess, like, after each set of doors, there was like a series of stumps with ingredients on it. And I guess the concept was supposed to be that there would be one less ingredient than there were paladins that could get through. But yeah, never got to that point. the second door was the rope. The third door, they had to dig their way underneath it. Another classic Survivor challenge, digging your way to get underneath an obstacle, where Patrick complained that his big bubble butt would not be able to get him under the door easily.
Yeah, which is a great mental image of, like, Patrick trapped under the door like Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, and just like, we'll not let go of the pot of honey.
Yeah.
And then the final door is like, I like how they have to stop and kind of read the instructions for each door, and Andrew, who's kind of the self-described ADHD personal trainer, it basically says, you know, punch the door down, and he just walks through it. I mean, there was like no needing to like break through it in several sections and dismantle it. He took 2 seconds and it was just through it.
Yeah, that was a little anticlimactic. Although I did really enjoy Andrew's enthusiasm about this challenge. Like, he was so super into it. They would cut to him at every door. They would cut to his confessional talking about how excited he was to do the next thing. Oh, hell yeah, I got an ogre tooth. And then, who gets to cut things with an ogre tooth? Wow, I get to dig under a door. Kick ass, I get to punch this door, go through it, get the ingredients. I enjoyed the spirit. He was really, really into it.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I think of the three challenges we've seen so far, between the working as a team to shoot the arrow over the into the oncoming fake army, the kind of marksmanship challenge last week and this one. This was definitely, I think, the most physical in terms of actually getting up close and physical with something. The most hands-on, I think, of the challenges.
Yeah, and by far the most exciting to watch.
Yes, agreed. And I think that was something, and I'm glad that we got to something like this where, like, I talked a little bit about it in last week's podcast, is that the first 2 weeks really felt like the tutorial of a video game, or like the prologue of a novel, where I was really, really dreading that we'd have week three of battle training. And where it's just kind of like, you know, you have a dummy that you have to hit, or you have a you know, stationary target that you have to hit. It's now finally, I think, the plot is progressing, the action is progressing, and it was much more exciting and engaging to watch.
Yeah, like, I am shocked at how much of a difference it makes to have that little bit of storyline in there, and they're not just, you know, getting ready for something, they're actually doing a thing, and they're in the middle of the plot, and they're actually on a little mini quest in this, like, larger macro quest, and it makes such a huge difference in the stakes. Like, it makes it so much more interesting to watch.
And it was nice that they also got out of the castle, or the immediate area of the castle. I mean, you got the sense that, you know, in the first couple episodes they were staying in the castle, or maybe the training grounds just outside the castle, but everything seemed safe and not wild. And finally, you almost got this sense, like, you know, going back to, you know, the Princess Bride, that they are maybe going through the fire swamp, or it was some sort of new location that is just kind of added to the fantasy and the story of the realm.
Yeah, and they'd spent a bit of time in that forest before, where they saw, like, Creo's buddy get eaten by whatever that was that ate him.
Oh, I have to go back and watch it.
Yeah, it was at the very beginning of the first episode, when they went through, like, the Phantom of the Opera cave, and then they get out and they're walking through the woods, and we could not tell whether that guy was, like, with Creo, or if he was pretending to be a contestant like they did with Whodunit.
I believe okay, I remember, I thought you were talking about the beginning of this episode. Yeah, that was, like, I think it was an ogre that they had said came out of the woods and attacked them. And that was basically just, like, Lantern Bearer number two, the person that kind of guided them through the cave. Yeah, and it was before they met up with Creo. So, yeah, he was red shirt material. That part was also kind of really intriguing for me. It was, like, the journey through the cave, through the Marwood, I think it was called. The setting of the castle is really cool, but I think where the fun happens is kind of when they get out of that and are a bit further afield.
Yeah, and I like seeing more dimensions of the universe as well.
Exactly. We see Andrew get all four ingredients. He kind of comes out on top on this challenge. And then he also gets the honor of mixing these ingredients together and basically making the potion himself. And so he has to go to the cauldron to mix everything together. Although through the very controlling actions and instructions of the hag, like, just a little bit more, not that much, just a little bit. And then there's, Was that the red glowing substance? Was that something that was added in post, or was the liquid actually glowing red?
I think the liquid was actually going red. They must have had some kind of effect in there to make that happen.
Okay. And they mixes it all together, and Bonnie was very excited about this. There's one point when, as the things are getting mixed together, and the cauldron suddenly starts to smoke, and the hag is cackling, and then. Bonnie just found this absolutely amazing. She was eating this up and just loving the experience of being here.
And again, enthusiasm goes a really long way in this show.
Yeah, it's great that I think we brought up many times last year when we covered Whodunit, was, you know, at some you. Yes, you know that people aren't really being killed around you, but you kind of, it's more fun if you immerse yourself in the experience and just kind of go along with the flow. There wasn't a real story there, but there was this conceit that, you know, the people around you are getting killed and that you may be next. And the fact, so it was fun in that show watching, you know, people, you know, showing legitimate concern or worry or crying that they might be next. And even though us watching know that there's no danger there, same here, it's really nice to see that the paladins are throwing themselves into this and just, like, immersing themselves in the experience, which is, I think, a great job from the casting perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, as well as they couldn't do this believably if the environment was not so spot on.
Exactly. And that's... So they I think, you know, right before I think they mixed the potion, we see that Creo does award Andrew with the Mark of Wisdom. I think this is the first mark that Creo got to award, so I guess Sir Ansgar doesn't get to give all the marks away. So Creo gives the Mark of Wisdom, which Andrew is completely hyped about. And I'm trying to place Creo's accent, because it's not like a traditional British accent. It sounds maybe like a little South African or something, but if anybody out there can place Creo's accent, you know, tweet to us and let us know. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, he sounded to me kind of like a Scandinavian who has learned English really, really well.
Okay, I can see that too. Yeah. It's not like a traditional accent you would find in the British Isles.
Yeah, it's all over place. And yeah. I thought they probably grabbed some people from the area around the castle. Like, they must have cast some people from Austria.
Oh, probably. But yeah, I think that would make sense. Especially, I don't know how many of the main actors were. You imagine a lot of the extras probably are, but you think that you would definitely want to tap into some of the local talent if at all possible.
Yeah, definitely. It's cheaper that way.
Definitely. this is where I first I didn't obviously see the queen at the beginning of the episode, but this is my first experience of how bad she is looking, and she indeed is looking pretty darn bad. And the paladins at this point aren't sure. Like, can they 100% trust the hag? Is this actually going to work? And they give the potion to the queen, and you see this little wisp of stuff come out of her mouth, like the sickness escaping, or that's what I was kind of imagining it was. And she starts to come to.
Yeah, and then the vizier tries to take credit for it.
Yeah, who was it? Creo that basically said, no, it wasn't the vizier, it was Andrew.
Yeah, Creo's like, nice try, dude.
I was waiting for, and then I was waiting for, I like it, you know, the queen, you know, thanks, Andrew. And I was waiting for Andrew to call her milady again. That's strike two, Andrew. leave in shame.
You're banished.
You're banished.
You can't master etiquette. You didn't earn the mark of etiquette. You're out.
Okay, that's probably, you know, going back to that point where he called on the practice field when he called her milady. I don't know if I would have even caught that I'd messed up when I'd said that. Like, someone would have had to point out to me, and I'm like, oh, my bad.
Yeah, but it's the queen. You call the queen your majesty.
Well, you know, it hasn't been ingrained in me over years and years of you know, serfdom.
Yeah. Or I guess maybe on Game of Thrones, they're always calling the royalty your grace.
Well, there you go. Maybe I can get away with that. And in terms of, like, keeping folks up to speed on my Game of Thrones progress, last Thursday I had finished season one, and I'm now partway through season two. And so hopefully when we cover next week's episode of The Quest, I'll have actually started season three. So I'm trying to bust my way through Game of Thrones so I can catch all of Rob's references.
Well, congratulations on finishing season one.
Oh, thank you.
I'll give you the mark of season one.
Great. The mark of Netflix.
Yes. The mark of binge watch.
There we go. Oh, I'm like a pro at that. I could teach a master course on that. So there's not much time to celebrate the fact that the queen is returning to consciousness before the paladins get ushered out again, and then we're back into understanding that it's Bonnie and Christian and Jim who have to go into the test of the fates, and Jim's already down on himself again at the beginning, and that's when we enter. He's got Shondo in his corner. He has to be confident.
Yeah, and Shondo's kind of amazing. Like, he's the soundbite king.
Yes.
Like, last week when he's talking about the dubs, and this week he gives Jim the best nickname ever, Jimbo Slice.
Yep. Good old Jimbo Slice.
Yep. And I liked that it seemed like everyone in the bottom three kind of had their roommate in their corner sort of coaching them.
Yeah, because, Shondo is Jim's roommate, and then Patrick was Bonnie's roommate, and Andrew was Christian's roommate.
Yeah. And so you cut to their rooms, and the roommates are all like, we're going to get you through this. You're great. You're awesome. I got your back. And I thought that was really sweet.
And it seemed like everybody was strongly behind Bonnie.
Yeah, everybody was Team Bonnie for sure.
Okay. And it seemed, but it also seemed that after coming out of last week's episode, that there were many people who were had said to Christian, and I don't know the numbers. I know that it was that at least Jasmine had said it, and it seemed like many other people had, you know, Shondo, I think, had said it, that basically said, you know, Christian, you're 2 for 2 in terms of going into the Trial of the Fates. If you're 3 for 3, come on, guy, like that's we can't keep you.
Yeah, so, get it together, dude.
Exactly. So that seemed to be the prevailing sentiment around Christian. And then there was Jim, and that was just, I think, a lot of, again, self-doubt there. And, you know, people were talking about how, you know, Jim's a really nice guy, and that, you know, if Christian won the first stage of the Battle of the Fates or the Trial of the Fates, then it would be Bonnie against Jim for a vote, and then that would be kind of just tear people up because they're both so nice.
Yeah. Yeah, and there seemed to be an element of strategy there, because everybody's really worried about voting for the wrong person and causing tension between all of the paladins. And I think this is an interesting dynamic that comes into play that you don't see in games like Survivor, where it's all secret ballot.
Right. With this, what do you think of that approach where you have to vote, not just vote in front of everybody so you see where everybody is, but there's like also an order. So if you come in third and you already see two people in front of you and how they've voted, that impact on your choice. What do you think of this open forum voting?
I think it tends to make people just bandwagon.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure I like that very much, because if you are like the ninth person to vote and you look out and you see that the vote is already 6-2, like, what's your incentive to go against the crowd there? Like, you might as well just vote for the person that's gonna stay anyway.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of it either. I think it also like last week we saw that it was 4-4, which was, I think, very interesting. And then it was, I believe, I think it was Andrew last week who had kind of the tiebreak vote about who would stay and who would go. So in that case, the last person to vote was quote unquote the decision maker. Whereas, you know, to your point, if it's, you know, clearly, you know, 5-2 and you're the last person, what's the incentive for you to go and potentially ruffle feathers and stand behind the person who's definitely going home?
Yeah, like, it's not particularly democratic.
Right.
Which I guess fits the, you know, this is a kingdom. This is probably, they probably didn't vote for the queen.
Yeah.
It's not an autonomous collective. They don't take turns at it.
It's... Yeah, to that point, it's also like these are supposed to be, you know, virtuous paladins who are trying to attain the title of, you know, the one true hero. So, you know, maybe there's also this sentiment that they must vote honorably and will vote with their heart and what feels right. And so, you know, if the intent is that they'll just, you know, that they will vote how they had planned to vote, we did see in some voiceovers today that some people wanted, I think it sounded like some people wanted to support Jim, but their vote wouldn't have mattered, and so they stood behind Christian.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that can be a little problematic, and especially with someone like Christian that a lot of people want out, but they're not really confident in speaking up about it. I think that could keep someone like him around for a long time, which I guess is good for television, but it's not necessarily the healthiest choice for the paladins, because that dude is not lawful good. He is no true paladin.
I know. I was thinking, like, when we saw right before they went to the Trial of the Fates, we saw Bonnie singing the Ballad of Everrealm that she had written. I thought she had a very lovely voice.
Yeah, it was a beautiful song. Yeah. I was impressed.
I was like, you know, if she doesn't make it as a paladin, she could always be a bard. You know, she could go down that road. Whereas And, you know, and then, you know, and Christian, I think, you know, definitely more of a rogue than a paladin. So it's like, it bothers me. I think you had even mentioned on the first episode, the imbalance of having 12 paladins in one group.
Yeah. And it would be kind of cool if they get to redistribute that at some point, but I doubt they're going to get that high concept.
Yeah, no, it's all paladins all the time until we get to the One True Hero. It's
paladins all the way down.
There we go. They make their way to the. We need to come up with the. We need to come up with like a name for this place that the Fates kind of hold court, whether it's Fairy Central or what. But they go to the
Fates
ruins.
R Us.
Yeah, Fates. They go to the local chapter of Fates R Us, the local franchise. And the Fates start talking about how, you know, tests are not always epic. Which reminds me of the conversation. We were talking, you know, last week about the horseshoe challenge, like also not an epic challenge. So I was like, oh no, what are they going to do this time? Is it going to be like, are they going to have to like sort laundry? Like, is this really just the Fates' way of getting the paladins to do their chores that they don't want to do? But no, it was, and it kind of was. It was measuring ingredients accurately, or
yeah, it really. I was kind of amazed at how suspenseful they managed to make this really mundane task of grinding shit up and putting it in a balancey thing, and measuring it correctly.
And I was a little disappointed that we didn't have better camera angles on the balancers. On the because I just from when I was like the angle that I had or the angle that everybody had, like I had a special TV view that others didn't.
You got but that 360 TV action.
There, I paused it and I repositioned myself and
like the Matrix.
Yeah, it was exactly. It was the angle scene they took with the cameras didn't really like show how closely things were. It was hard to tell how balanced or unbalanced things were. And I thought the way it was going to be was that they are going to have to like literally be given a list of measurements that like the white powder, you have to have 3 ounces of this, and this one you have to have 6 ounces, and this one you have to have 5 ounces or something like that. And they have to get like as close to it as possible. But it literally was just you had to have – there are 3 places you could put the substances. You had to have sub-substance on each of these plates, on each of these balance points. But they had to be distributed in a way that – none of the metal arms that were holding these plates touched either the top or bottom disc or something like that.
Yeah, they had to be in a particular proportion. And you could certainly end up making way more than you had to of all the substances.
Yeah. And because we saw at one point, I think Christian was kind of like gently dusting some stuff off of a plate that he had placed some stuff on. I was actually more the nerve-wracking thing for me was the use of the grindstones. Because, like, I would have lost a finger myself.
Yeah, that looked dangerous.
Yes. Like, those things are moving fast. And even the fact that Christian was even able to use it incorrectly makes me, you know, gave me pause. So if he was using it incorrectly, if he was putting these substances on the wrong side of the grindstone, wouldn't they have basically been shooting up in the air into his face?
They really should have. And I think that would have been fun to watch.
Unless they had to manually spin the grindstone themselves and he was just cranking it in the opposite direction and putting the stuff in the wrong side.
That seems more likely.
Okay. Because I can see him putting the finger bone in there to grind up. It goes shooting off into the air and it hits his Bonnie or something.
And he loses it and he tries to get Bonnie to help him look for it.
Yeah, exactly. I can't find the finger bone I'm supposed to grind.
And Bonnie's like, no, dude, that doesn't work twice. I got your finger bone right here.
Fool me once. Yeah. Shame on you. But Bonnie ends up winning. And it did seem like it was between Jim and Bonnie for the most part. It didn't seem like Christian had a horse in this race necessarily. Because like he was grinding it wrong and Jim was speaking confidently without speaking cockily about the challenge. So I actually had hopes that Jim was going to win it, but it seemed like Bonnie was the one that ended up pulling it out and saving herself, which pleased the crowd.
Yeah, people were really on Team Bonnie.
Yeah. And that's when we end up going into the debate, the roundtable debate just outside the Fates R Us franchise. And these tend to just confuse me now more than anything. The debates, because I'm not really sure. I don't ever come out of any of them now 100% sure or even like 70% sure about who's going to vote for who.
Yeah, and I think this is where editing is kind of, this is a tricky thing that the editors have to do, because if they show too much of the deliberation, it's going to be very obvious what's going to happen next, and they're trying to draw it out until after the next commercial break, so they don't ever show you anybody saying anything particularly useful. But the stuff they have had us watch them say has not been anything that we've borne witness to, which is also confusing.
Right. And it almost seems as if production gives them the instructions to each of you must argue both options.
Yeah, which is, the same thing they do on Survivor. Like, if it's totally obvious that everybody's going to vote for one person, they come up with reasons that people have to do a confessional about why this other person could conceivably go.
True.
Yeah.
And because we saw here, it seemed like a lot of people were, it seemed like several people were pointing out that this is Christian's third time in the Battle of the Fates. It's his second time actually having to be, because Christian won the very first one he was in. And this is the second time that he is up for the liberation. And, we've given you three chances so far. It seemed like the biggest proponents behind Christian staying were his roommate Andrew, mm-hmm. which, as you pointed out earlier, wasn't really a surprise. But for me, the surprise was Adria, the redheaded marketing director.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a shocker, and her comment was particularly puzzling. He still has a lot he can teach us. And it's like, really, what has he taught you? They're not showing this.
Yeah, and I think that is at that point where Letitia or Jasmine point, well, so does Jim. Jim has a lot he could teach us too. And Adria's like, yeah, of course. So they seem to really be supporting Christian. And see, the interesting thing for me is if I take a look at Jasmine, at the table, like Jasmine seemed to also be saying that Christian had qualities that would make him want to stay. It was strange. If I back up a little bit about Jasmine, last week she seemed to be, she was saying, prior to the Trial of the Fates, that she saw how Christian was socializing with everybody and she had her eye on him, like you said earlier, that she had his number. And so I thought for sure that last week she was going to go for Ashley to stay and for Christian to go home. But last week she voted for Christian to stay. And then some of the things that she was saying at the deliberation today, at this in episode 3, it made it sound like she was actually, you know what, Christian probably has a little bit more that he can offer the group, or there's nothing more there that we would potentially want on our side down the road. And then she ends up she was one of the two people who voted for Jim to stay. So Jasmine has me a little bit confused. It seems like she's always backing the opposite person that we see her arguing for. It's very obvious. She could be arguing both sides, but she's got me the most confused.
Yeah, well, I think it's like you said. I'm pretty sure everybody has to argue both sides. And I thought was particularly interesting to be watching Twitter while I was also watching the show, because the Paladins noted that there were a few factors in their decision to vote for Christian. And one of them was that in the training sessions, he was apparently very helpful, which is what inspired Adria to say that he has a lot to teach them.
Okay.
Because he has some sort of Renaissance fair type expertise. I don't know if he was in the SCA or if he worked at Medieval Times or something like that, but it's something that he seems to know a lot about that they aren't showing us for some reason.
I believe is he like a waiter or a bartender?
Yeah, he's a server.
I'm hoping Medieval Times then. I'm really hoping Medieval Times.
Yeah, my fingers crossed.
It would be too good to be true, but that would be awesome if it was Medieval Times. I mean, we did see last week it was referenced that he had some sort of weapons background, and I do think that in the previews for next week where we do see some weaponry going on, it does look like Christian is handling a weapon very well. So maybe that is the case.
I'm not sure I want that guy to have a weapon. An interesting thing, there was this show, and I can't remember what it was called, it was on last summer, that was about jousting, and they had all these contestants who came from various backgrounds. Like, they had some MMA fighters, and they had people that were good with horses, and they had a guy who worked at Medieval Times who apparently did very, very well in the jousting.
I remember seeing promos for that show. Now that you mentioned, I cannot remember what the name of it was.
Yeah, I can't either. It shows how successful it was.
It would be great if these people got a chance to joust. I don't think we're going to get to see that. I mean, the closest I think we get to see was when they did have the lance in the battle training last week, where they had to kind of hit a small target with their lance. But it'd be awesome to see some legitimate jousting going on.
Yeah, Full Metal Jousting was the name of that program.
Oh, nice. Yes.
And
that wasn't with the ostriches, right? That wasn't the old classic joust
video
game?
Yeah, no, there were no ostriches involved, right. And that was why I tuned in, and so then when there weren't any ostriches, I stopped watching.
That makes sense. I think we'd be on the same page there.
Yeah, and they called theatrical jouster was the euphemistic term for medieval times waiter.
Yeah. Oh, that's the pharmaceutical sales rep of the medieval shows.
Exactly. I noticed one other thing I loved in their deliberation chamber. Up on the wall, there are these like hologrammy sort of Harry Potter looking images of the people that have been banished.
I think those are at the Quarter of the Fates.
They are in the actual like Fate Room.
Yeah, I think that's where that's at. But no, I had the same because I think that's when we see like the next person's face light up there when at the very end of the show.
Yeah.
No, I got the exact same Harry Potter moving portrait type feeling that you did. That's, yeah.
Yeah. And, it also sort of reminded me of the end of Return of the Jedi. And it's like, you know, here we've got Jim and Katie and Ashley all smiling fondly and sending you on your way to your next Jedi adventure. Or they could be actually trapped in there like General Zod. I don't know.
Nice. Yeah, when I saw the first episode, my impression was that they were like getting teleported back to our earthly realm. But then I think it wasn't until the second episode that I noticed, oh no, so Katie's kind of floating up there from the first episode. So maybe they're in limbo or something.
Yeah, they're imprisoned and they'll be released at the end to vote on the winner or something.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing. Like, we don't know about what the end game is, like, other than, like, from a storyline perspective, there's one true hero which we're hoping will vanquish the darkness, specifically Verlok's the darkness, coming to an arena near you. But there's no, like, we don't know if it's literally going to get down to two or three people, and they're going to be a challenge. Is it going to be one person? Will there be voting? Is there any sort of monetary prize for making it all the way to the end?
Could be a King of the Nerds style ending where they have to do a quest and enlist help.
Maybe they become the princess that's stuck in another castle for next year's the quest.
So there you go.
So they become the target of the quest for next year. a la Mario. I'm sorry, your paladin is in another castle. So we see. Yeah, they deliberate. And it ends up being a 6-2 vote for Christian to stay. And we even saw, I think it was Bonnie who said that Patrick kind of had led the momentum for people physically standing behind Christian and keeping him there. Although, you know, the first two people, I think, were Jasmine and Andrew, and they stood behind Jim and Christian, respectively. But then, you know, Patrick went out and, I guess, stood behind Christian, and then that just got everybody standing behind Christian except for Shonda and Jasmine. So 6-2, and Jim is going to be playing Quidditch in the Banished Realms.
I wonder what Banished Realms Quidditch looks like. Very two-dimensional.
I just don't think that there's a ground. There's like no gravity, and the goals can be in any of the three coordinate planes.
That's amazing.
You'll go with that.
Yeah, I noticed on Twitter, Patrick observed that the reason that he was so Team Christian was because he thought that Christian had been helping Bonnie. And at this point, everybody was under that impression that they had been, you know, colluding on this when really Christian wasn't doing very much at all.
And it wasn't until, I think, after they got back to the castle that Letitia pointed out to, at least to Jasmine, that, like, you know what, you know, people are talking about Christian having helped Bonnie, but I was watching it and he really wasn't doing a whole lot. And it looked like Letitia was actually regretting not having voted for Jim over Christian, or regretted having backed Christian.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe they'll actually get something together. So it looks like the women are fairly together on this. It seems like Letitia and Lena and Bonnie are all fairly close.
Yeah, but there was a scene where I think, you know, Lena and Andrew and Christian were all hugging, and so it seems like they're pretty close. We saw Adria, you know, completely backing Christian. Jasmine was the one woman who backed, you know, Jim. I don't know how legitimately, you know, together they are as a group. I think there are still some fractures even between the women potentially.
Oh, certainly there's fractures.
Hopefully not as, I mean, hopefully we don't get to a point like the current Big Brother house is, where that all the women are getting, you know, rode out of the house one after another.
Yeah, that, I don't think I could keep watching a show like that. In fact, I stopped watching Big Brother.
Yeah, but it seems that, you know, unfortunately, it was, you know, I was rooting for Jim, and unfortunately, he did go, but it did break the chain of two consecutive females going out. So
yeah, in that regard, I'm okay with it. But I did like Jim very much, and I wanted to see more of him.
And it does worry me a little bit. It was interesting, at least through the first few episodes, to see there doesn't seem to be a lot of alliance making that you would typically see in a reality TV show. But the first time we got to kind of hear people vocalize concerns about how am I going to be perceived if I don't vote this person and these people are going to potentially stand out, I'm a little bit worried for Shondo and Jasmine, given that they vocally stood out against Christian and stood by Jim, even though Jim ended up going. So hopefully we don't, that doesn't come back and bite them.
Yeah, well, if they can spin it as less of a we were voting against Christian and more of a we were Team Jimbo Slice all the way, I think the group keeps saying how close they are, like they're all like family. I think they could probably spin it as loyalty. And if they say they knew their vote wasn't going to count anyway.
Yeah, I think Shondo could pull that off, because he was, I think, one of the last. It seemed like he was one of the last few people to vote that he can even say, you know, when I went out there, I knew my vote wasn't going to matter, and I wanted to support Jim. I think Jasmine was the very first person out there.
Yeah, that was.
And so she
that
might be
bold.
A little bit. Yeah, that was very, very bold. So we'll see how that ends up kind of, if that ends up coming to bite them, and that kind of takes us to the cliffhanger of the episode. And so we see this kind of these shots of the courtyard, them just being asked to come down and help. I guess there's lots of random chores that need to be taken care of in the courtyard of Castle Sanctum.
Yeah, we gotta move this thing and cut this thing and clean this thing up, and
lots of relatively loud chores for what seems to be pretty late in the night. I'm just thinking that if I had a room like right off the courtyard, I would have been really ticked off. Like, I would not have been able to sleep. There's people sawing wood and banging things together. It's like 11 at night, and it's just really inconsiderate what these people had to do.
Well, maybe they're trying to keep bears away.
There we go. You know, they just need to close the gates. They just need to maybe try that.
Yeah, put down the portcullis and yes. Everybody go to bed.
But it seemed like I was trying to take note of like what were the different things. There was a lot of sawing of wood. It looked like there was some carting of wood. I saw that looked like Letitia and Lena were pulling some sort of cart filled with something. I look at people were putting chairs together at one point. I wasn't really sure if that's what was going on. But it seemed to basically be the stage directions were stay busy in courtyard until X happens, and you will know when X happens.
Yeah, and I would say at this point, anytime they're told to go somewhere and just hang out, they got to be prepared for something crazy to happen.
Yeah, and again, this is not to keep tying it back to Whodunit, the best show of 2013. But it's that point where you know that somebody, you know, two people had already gotten the killed cards. You just don't know who's going to die yet. And it's the next morning, and you're waiting to see, okay, who doesn't show up? Okay, everybody did show up. Okay, what's going to happen then? Because one of these people has to die. It's kind of the exact same thing where it's the end of the show. I mean, they don't know in the game that's the end of the show, but it is, you know, just after the trial of the fates, and they're just waiting for something to happen. And you know, last I don't think they necessarily saw it coming last week. I think they were thinking that was a celebratory feast. But this week, they hear some sounds, some clanging and some screaming and lots of shouting, and apparently Castle Sanctum is under attack.
Yep, and it's gotta be the Darkness Guy.
I wonder if is it the Darkness Guy, or is it are the peasants revolting?
I they seemed like really nice people to me.
Oh, okay, it seems to be. I'm guessing if it's this early in the series, you think that a siege on the castle is one of the things that would happen at the end of the story. So I'm wondering if it is the main bad guy, or if it's if they're testing the defenses maybe or something.
Or maybe it's just Ansgar's like, hey guys, I'm locked out. Can somebody let me in?
He's just banging angrily on the front gates.
Yep.
Or maybe this is all a test. Maybe we're going to see Ansgar, like, suddenly, you know, all the screaming and stuff is going to stop, and, you know, Ansgar steps out of the shadows doing the slow, sarcastic clap. Well done, paladins. While you were scrambling to get your armor on, the entire castle was slain. In the meantime, I could have gone out there myself, you know.
And killed them all with my little finger.
Exactly. So maybe this is all a test for them to show that anything could happen at any time, and you need to be ready, and you need to be battle ready. As I kind of came to that earlier, it seems like there is going to be quite a bit of swordplay next week on the quest.
Yeah, I'm excited. Like, they were hitting things and they were getting injured. It looked like it's going to be a good time.
Yeah. Any time that you can, you know, swing a sword at your fellow paladin, I think you're going to have some good TV, especially if there is the opportunity for low levels of injury.
Yeah, I think a moderate amount of bodily harm is almost desirable in this environment.
Exactly. It keeps everybody on their toes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that's, you know, a lot of, you know, episode 3 of the quest.
Yeah, I think we have quite comprehensively tackled every aspect of this episode.
Yeah, I'm doing a quick check on Twitter and Facebook, and I'm not seeing any questions out there. Oh. Has anything come up on your end?
Yeah, I got one from Sarah Freeman.
Ah!
And she says, do you want the quest paladins to vote strategically or play along with what's best for the realm?
That's a great question.
It really is.
It's interesting, because it goes back to the, like, literally, do you think that with Survivor, you know how the game plays out. With Survivor, you know that there's these types of challenges, and that, you know, before the merge, you want to have a strong team, but after the merge, you don't want to be the strongest person because you're a target. Here, it's a lot less clear. Because we've seen some like in the very first challenge, we saw that it paid to have strong people by your side because you worked as a team to accomplish something. But the next two challenges were all individual challenges. There's been a lot of talk about keeping strong people because strong people can help you get to the end. And I don't know necessarily if that's going to be the case. It seems like right now there's kind of I think we're seeing things slowly creep toward a safety in numbers potential voting strategy. I don't think I think you see a couple people who are voting for who they think, quote unquote, maybe deserves to be there or has the best growth opportunities. But yeah, it's a really strange voting dynamic.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see where this goes, and I'm very curious about what exactly the paladins were told their strategy should be.
Yeah, and they talk a little bit about that. I'll plug the podcast that Rob released earlier today, his interview with some of the producers. I think, you know, on that it comes out that, you know, they were also very curious indeed, or themselves, how the voting was potentially going to go. You know, I think many of them, the producers, had, you know, come from reality backgrounds or big, you know, big fans of reality TV, and, you know, even they had like a concern that you would potentially see voting blocks forming and people just ganging up on people. And so, I'm not sure where it's going to go. I, I, it all kind of depends on how the story plays out, I guess, and what kinds of challenges we start to see. Because if we start seeing there being benefits to being the first person to win something, pointing out the way the challenges have worked, we've seen a few of the people end up in the bottom, you know, a few times. Like Christian's been there 3 times, Jim was there twice. This was Bonnie's first trip into the bottom three. It'll be interesting to see what ends up happening next time.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, no matter what it ends up being, I can see that it's definitely a departure from what we're used to seeing. And I like that quite a bit, because I think, and I mean, I was at a place in my life where I was watching a lot of television during those, like, kind of golden years where every night you'd turn on the TV and there'd be a different reality show on.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to have no life at the time. And I remember thinking how totally formulaic they were. There were about 3 different ways you could do it. You could have a third party deciding who was going to go. You could have everybody voting, or you could have a contest and the loser goes.
Right.
And this looks like it's a combination of all of these things in kind of with a new spin on it that we haven't seen yet before.
Yeah. I don't know if I did a good job of giving my thoughts on Sarah's question, but it's something I'm just going to have to wait and see how it ends up evolving.
Yeah, and I think anything that feeds the narrative is going to be good for this show.
Yeah.
So I'm almost inclined to say that I'm on team narrative.
Yes. I love the fact that there's this narrative that underlies what's going on. I think I've seen other shows try to do it, but so far this is doing the best job of kind of having that almost be at the forefront, with the competition being a little bit secondary to the narrative.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't say this enough. I think the fact that everybody's so into it, and the fact that it's so seamless, this entire world, like, you don't see, like, there's the other side of the scenery, or, you know, here's a, you know, someone's standing just off camera, like, drinking a soda and smoking a cigarette. Those things don't appear to be happening, as far as I can tell.
We don't see the airplane kind of flying through the air as they do their battle practice, or stray bottles of water, like, lying around. They're doing a good job of keeping everything authentic.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so immersive, and people are so whole hog into it that it's, I think, in less capable hands, this could be a total fiasco.
But they're doing good. I think they're doing a good job.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going to keep watching. I definitely want to know what's going to happen next.
Agreed. And hopefully all of you will tune in next week. I think Rob will be returning from his foray into the other 11 kingdoms of Everrealm. He should be back with us next week. In the meantime, Jess, if people want to follow you on Twitter or on other podcasts, where might they find you?
Well, I am primarily the Rob Has a Podcast correspondent covering The Amazing Race. And right now I'm the lead everything on the Amazing Race International Reality Wrap-Ups, which you can find at the bottom of robhasawebsite.com. And you can always follow me on Twitter at HeyMakerHattie. And what you get there is mostly me complaining about The Amazing Race and occasionally live-tweeting the quest, which I did tonight. It was very fun.
And if you want to follow me, I am at Kurt Clark with 2 C's on Twitter. You'll get a lot of photos of food and some reality TV stuff occasionally. I did want to live tweet the quest tonight. It was a little tough when I was watching this. I was watching actually watching the quest on my laptop, unfortunately. So I didn't want to bounce back and forth between Twitter and taking notes and watching the quest and missing something and not being able to rewind it. But I do hope to live tweet down the road. As for other podcasts, I'm kind of the international Big Brother correspondent. Myself and Mallory Beasley have been podcasting all summer about Big Brother UK, which is in its final week. Tomorrow is the Big Brother UK finale, tomorrow being Friday the 15th of August. And I know that her and I are going to be podcasting about that Friday evening, shortly after we get to watch the finale online. And then I believe Celebrity Big Brother UK starts up on Monday. So we're kind of jumping right from one to the other. there's little break in between. So
no rest for the wicked, huh?
No rest for the wicked. And the Celebrity Big Brother UK house is pretty wicked. So
Who do they have? Do they have anybody that's an actual celebrity?
You know what? They do a really good job of keeping that under wraps, a better job than they would do on any show here in the U.S. And so literally on the U.K. shows, they do a launch night for Big Brother, and that's when the stars are first revealed. So there's always rumors that float about, and they are seldom ever correct. And in terms of the celebrities, there's usually maybe one person, sometimes two, that I've heard of. but they're usually, for instance, there's a I think like last season there was a there's a British version of the Jersey Shore called the Geordie Shore, and there was like a couple of people, there's somebody from there on it. So lots of people who are known in the UK, but it, like last season I think Evander Holyfield was on it, and in the past we've had Spencer and Heidi Pratt, we've had The Situation from Jersey Shore.
That kind of celebrity.
Yes, it's that kind of celebrity. It's less Celebrity Apprentice and more The Surreal Life from VH1 in terms of the types of people that are getting drawn into it.
Well, that must be very fun to podcast about.
It should be. This is the first time that we're covering Celebrity Big Brother UK. We've had a great time. And for all these people that we don't know, we just feel like we're watching a regular season of Big Brother. So it should be a good time. But basically, yeah, if all of you would like to subscribe to Reality TV Wrap-Ups, you'll get to hear both Jess and I in our respective podcasts. So thank you for pitch hitting with Rob out on assignments this week, Jess. It was great to finally get to do a podcast with you.
I know. It was like a meeting of two Rob Has a Podcast legends.
With lowercase L.
Yeah, lowercase L. Like, we're not quite the one true Rob Has a Podcast hero level yet, but, you know, it was really a lot of fun, and I'm really glad to be able to come back, and anytime you guys want to have me on, I'm happy to share my opinions.
Awesome. Well, glad you're watching, and glad you were able to join us this week, so awesome.
All right. And with that, I guess we are bidding a fond farewell to episode 3.
Yes, and which means we'll tune into episode 4 next week. And until then, thank you, everybody, and we will catch you later.
All right, good night.
Bye.